stand here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Wesley Smith. We're going to be talking about his book, Forced Exit. And Mr. Smith is an attorney, but he's written extensively on the efforts of euthanasia, this effort to, of course, to snuff out lives of the elderly, to justify people getting a living will. And, of course, you think when you go into the hospital and you've got a living will, and you've said you don't want any extraordinary methods used to keep you alive, you don't know extraordinary could be interpreted as giving you food and water to get you through the first day or two. And, of course, certainly most people would not want to think about being on a respirator the rest of their lives, but extraordinary could be even putting you on a respirator temporarily to get you through the acute phase of your disease. In fact, the people with SARS, most of the people in hospitalized, had to be on respirators or they would have died, and many of them did recover after that. So you never know what these words mean, and you have to understand there really are people who have a different view of the world than the Judeo-Christian worldview. Mr. Smith, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
We've, of course, enjoyed your book, Forced Exit, and I think it's got a very, very important message in it, because there's such a stress today on the importance of people making preparations for going to the hospital and having that living well. But, of course, what does that living well really mean?
Well, you know, it kind of depends, because there are now bioethicists who are trying to make it that even if you have a living will that says, I want treatment and I want my life sustained, they are proclaiming the right to say no if they don't think your life has a quality that they think is worth living. This is called futile care theory, F-U-T-I-L-E, and it is really frightening because it is coming to hospitals all around the country. There are bioethics journals writing about it. It's been written up in the American Medical Association Journal, the New England Journal of Medicine, and so forth. So what I am hearing from people and what I am reading in these journals is that people are going into hospitals, and on occasion, people are saying, sorry, Aunt Gertrude can't be treated for her stroke because we don't think her life is worth living. We'll just give her comfort care. And, of course, that isn't choice. That is the idea of imposing values on sick and vulnerable and elderly people.
But, of course, the argument would be, look, there's only a limited number of resources, financial resources, and these people are draining the resources that could be used for young, vibrant people. Certainly wouldn't it be better if we just let them go so there'd be money? Because this shortage of money. And yet, of course, I can remember as a physician practicing for many years, before government got involved in the health care delivery, we never talked about money or letting people die to save money.
Well, doctors used to believe they had an ethical and professional obligation to participate in charity care on occasion. And it is about money. Even the assisted suicide movement is about money. Derek Humphrey, who is the founder of the Hemlock Society, which is, of course, the largest assisted suicide advocacy group in the country, in his most recent book specifically stated, what is the answer to the question, euthanasia, why now? Money. He said we could save billions of dollars by killing people. We could save billions of dollars for people who can be cured. Well, you know, if we start down that road, if we start saying we can't afford some lives, but we can afford others, what you're doing is you're creating explicit health care rationing, and all that is discrimination against disabled people, dying people, chronically ill people, and eventually it will ensnare each and every one of us.
I'm going to have to interrupt you there, or would you be back in just a moment here with as new stations out on our network?
All righty.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly our guest today is Wesley Smith. We're going to be talking about his book, Forced Exit, and, you know, in a completely immoral society that believed in the Christian or Judeo-Christian ethic, this would not be a problem. When I went to medical school 50 years ago, preservation of human life was what it was all about. You were supposed to take care of people. You weren't to be worried about the expenses and how much this was going to cost Medicare and the shortage of funds because government is providing health care for everybody. Our job was to take care of people, and I never heard any hospital administrator say, well, we're going to withhold care because it's just too expensive. And we kept people alive many times in comas, and I've seen them come out. I can remember seeing people where the neurosurgeon was intent upon turning off the respirator because they were going to be sure to die. But, you know, the trouble is doctors aren't gods. Some of them like to think that they are. And seen those people who would have died had the doctor had his way walk out of the hospital with their family and live many, many productive years after that. And this is the problem that we have in the society today. There really are people who want to play God and forget that God basically gave us life. And, of course, God is the source of life. And these people who reject life, God, isn't a lot of this really based upon people's attitude towards, is life important? Is there a God? Because if there's no God, then why not just let people die?
Are you asking me?
Oh, yes.
I'm sorry. The issue is both religious and it's secular. I mean, there are certainly religious people who worry that this is an attack on Christian values and Christian ethics. And in some regards, I think that's true, because you have people like Jack Kevorkian, who proudly espoused that he was an atheist and that his idea was to move us past the old antiquated superstitions. But it isn't just religious people who are opposing this. I mean, some of the most implacable foes of euthanasia and assisted suicide are the disability rights advocates, who tend to be very secular and very liberal politically. But you know why they're against this? They see themselves as the targets. They know that people are saying that their lives aren't worth living, and if on one hand, if they want to kill themselves, they'll be more than happy to let them do it. On the other hand, if they want medical treatment under this futile care theory, they will be refused treatment. So, you know, we've created a quite vibrant coalition of very strange political bedfellows who are fighting against this death culture and this death agenda that is made up of people who are religious, who are conservative, who are pro-life, but also made up of people who are not religious, are not pro-life, and are not conservative. And we need that, because in order to stop this, you're going to have as many people on our side as we can get.
We're going to have to interrupt you. We bring our last station online right now. Well, Dr. Stan here, and of course our guest this afternoon is Wesley Smith, and we're talking about the organized euthanasia movement and this idea that there's certain lives that aren't worth living, and of course certain people are so wise they can determine whose lives are not worth living. And I think one of the most dangerous group we have in America today are the ethicists, and I've heard them at hospital meetings talking about, oh, well, wouldn't the mercy, and they even talk about a movie I remember with Steve McQueen, where one of his friends was being tortured by the Indians, and
yeah.
Steve McQueen, of course, just loved this man, and so he shot him, so he wouldn't have the excruciating pain.
Right, they're talking about, they bring that one up every time. That is, because we're not willing to kill our parents, we're not willing to kill our spouses.
Because we love them, right.
Because we love them, and because we know that the proper way to care for people with illnesses and disability is proper medical care. They will bring up the Sand Pebbles, which is an old Steve McQueen movie about the Boxer Rebellion in China. And in one of the characters, who was a Chinese man, as I recall, the movie is caught and is going to be tortured to death. So Steve McQueen shoots him. And then we are told that because of this movie, this fictional premise where once in a 100 billion odds where you have somebody going to be tortured to death, that we should legalize killing people with cancer, killing people with AIDS, killing people with spinal injury, killing people with Parkinson's disease, killing people with the other afflictions that harm us. And that attitude that killing is an acceptable answer to the problems of human suffering doesn't end with this idea of terminal illness or even disability, because if you take a look at what's going on in the Netherlands, which has permitted euthanasia for 30 years, you see, once you accept killing as a good as opposed to a bad, then how do you keep this, quote, good from a wider and wider group of people. I mean, once you get desensitized and once you're no longer squeamish about the act of killing, it becomes progressively easier. Therefore, in the Netherlands, what we find is that not only do doctors kill terminally ill people who ask for it, but they then went on to chronically ill people who ask for it. They went on to disabled people who ask for it. They then went after and people who weren't sick but depressed who asked for it. And that was a Supreme Court case in the Netherlands called Chabot, C-H-A-B-O-T, in which a woman was grief-stricken because, and naturally so, her children had died. And she was obsessed with being buried between them. And so what did her psychiatrist do? Did he treat her? No. Do you know what he did? He assisted her suicide. I'm sorry for the fax machine in the background. He assisted her suicide. And the Dutch Supreme Court said that was right because suffering is suffering. It doesn't matter whether it's physically caused or emotionally caused. But it gets even worse in the Netherlands. Now that they've opened the door to the vampire, doctors are now killing babies because they're born with birth defects, pediatric euthanasia, eugenic infanticide, and I have right here in front of me, Doctor, you may want to look it up, The Lancet, Volume 350, July 26, 1997. And as you know, The Lancet is a medical journal from Great Britain. 8% of all infants who die in the Netherlands now die because they're killed by doctors. Now, you know, German doctors killed babies born with birth defects during World War II, and they were hanged after Nuremberg. And yet it is now legalized in the Netherlands. Moreover, 1,000 people a year, Dutch government study after Dutch government study, show that doctors are killing patients who have not asked to be killed. Why? Because they think it's good now to kill patients who are suffering, and the whole idea that it's about, quote, choice, no longer matters. That's even called termination without request or consent in the Netherlands, and now that it's been formally legalized, euthanasia upon request, Dutch doctors are saying, now you should legalize it for us when we do it without request. Finally, if you take a look at when euthanasia was formally legalized, the first thing the Minister of Health of the Netherlands said was, well, you know, there are some old people who are tired of life, those were her terms, who don't technically qualify for euthanasia, so if those people want it, we should give them suicide pills. What kind of a world are we creating when we're deciding that, okay, times are getting difficult for some people, let's kill them?
Well, I know, I don't know if you know Dr. John Wilkie, Jack Wilkie, but he was on a program telling about this one doctor who told him a story. He had put one of his patients into the hospital there in the Netherlands, and of course this woman had a cancer, but she wasn't suffering from it, and she was in the just to get some x-ray studies, and she was going to go home on you know, the first of the week, and of course the doctor is gone for the weekend. He comes back, and where is Mrs. Jones? Oh, we offed her. Well, why did you do that? We needed the bed. You know, and you know, how do you respond? I mean, what are you going to do at this point? The resident just killed this woman who was not suffering. She was going to die sometime in the future from her cancer, probably. She might not have, but she probably would. But of course, we're all going to die sometime in the future. When are we going to let the doctors play God? And this is the real problem we have. And
it's a huge problem, and it's something that is in human nature. Once we say killing is acceptable, then how do you limit it to narrow categories, especially when some people outside of those narrow categories, you know, it always begins with narrow categories, may suffer even more than people, than those in the categories. And the Netherlands demonstrates precisely what would happen here if we open the door to the wolf. And yet, I, for example, today debated the head of the Hemlock Society, and all he has to say to all of these things is, well, we're not the Netherlands. Well, we are human beings, and there are certain forces of gravity that come from our ideas, because our ideas have consequences, not to mention the money aspect that you discussed earlier in the show. You know, in this country, we're run by managed care now in terms of health care, HMOs. It only costs $40 for an assisted suicide. That's what the drugs cost. It could cost $40,000 to treat a patient properly so they don't want assisted suicide. Now, if we decide that killing is medicine and legitimate, you know, there's a lot of money, as Derek Humphrey pointed out in his book, there's a lot of money to be made on the backs of killing.
Well, now, what's happened in Oregon, and this is the only state so far that has legalized euthanasia, what has actually happened up there? You know, how many of these people are terminally ill? How many of them are depressed? And for one reason or another, just would like to have it ended all.
In Oregon, the practice of assisted suicide occurs behind an iron shroud of secrecy. That is, we don't know what's really going on. And the only time we catch a glimpse is if there's a newspaper article, usually because somebody has leaked something to the papers. And once a year, there are statistics published by the state. Now, these statistics are completely unreliable, and here's why. The only information the state has comes from the doctors who are willing to help kill patients. In other words, the doctors who write lethal prescriptions fill out forms, and they send it into the Oregon Department of Health. And then from these forms, assuming that the doctors fill them out, they compile their statistics. But here's an interesting point. Many patients in Oregon have gone to more than one doctor before they've been able to obtain a lethal prescription. The first patient who died in Oregon of assisted suicide went to three doctors. And the third doctor was a doctor closely affiliated with assisted suicide advocacy groups. So what we're finding is that almost all doctors in Oregon are refusing to participate in assisted suicide. I once heard one doctor say, I'm a physician, not an assassin, which I thought was a very good way to put it. So what happens is that a great bulk of these are being, the same doctors are writing a lot of these prescriptions, and these are death doctors, I call them, who are often associated with these groups. And so they send in the documents. But when the Oregon Department of Health finds out that there have been doctors who have refused to assist suicides, for some reason they don't contact those doctors, for example, to say, well, gee, why didn't you ask, why wouldn't you assist Mrs. A's suicide? What if the doctor said, you know, she wasn't terminally ill? Or what if the doctor said, you know, she was being pressured, or there was plenty we could do to alleviate her suffering, or she was depressed, and I realized that she didn't understand what was going on. The Department of Health in Oregon doesn't want to know that kind of thing, because they are conducting a hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil statistical assessment of assisted suicide that does not protect anybody, that does not oversee anyone. There's never an autopsy of these suicides as there is for other suicides to determine whether they're even terminally ill. And indeed, they don't want to know why people would say no, because it might cause them problems and they might have to investigate things. So the whole thing is completely out of control, conducted in secret with the patina or the veneer, if you will, of some semblance of control. It's also important to note that in Oregon, once that lethal prescription is written, there is zero protection for patients. And there's a case in which a woman that was written up in the Oregonian, a woman named Kate Cheney, who had Alzheimer's disease, wanted assisted suicide, so her doctor sent her to a psychiatrist. The psychiatrist said no to the assisted suicide, because she didn't understand what she was asking for, and the doctor also said that the main person pushing this was the daughter, not Kate Cheney herself. So what did, that should have ended it if protections protect anybody, but guess what? The daughter just talked the HMO who was in charge of Kate Cheney's health care into getting another opinion. This time they got a psychologist. The psychologist said, well, yes, she can't remember, you know, how long she's had cancer, and yes, there are family pressures, but I think she should be able to do it. So guess what? The HMO said, go ahead.
Well, it's a lot cheaper to do that than, of course, to try to keep her alive.
And there's no protection for Kate Cheney. And then once she got the drugs, who knows what she understood? Who knows even whether she understood she was taking them? Now, there's no indication she didn't, but how would we know?
Well, unfortunately, we have seems to have lost the moral compass that once made, of course, America a unique nation, and once made medicine a noble profession. Now, many doctors, I think, would be horrified at the thought of euthanasia, but I'm sure at one time the doctors over in Europe were horrified at that thought. And then little bit by little bit, of course, you begin to change society. And with this propaganda that's out there, and, of course, the healthcare crisis, and, gee, what are we going to do? We've got all these old people, and Medicare is going to run out of money in a few years. It's going to be really bankrupt, and it's going to cost the younger people. In fact, I heard Pete Peterson, a former director of the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, speaking the other day about the Medicare Social Security Trust Fund. He says there's no trust, there's no fund. The children, when they are going to have to be paying 25, 30, 40% of their income on taxes just to finance Medicare and Social Security. And, of course, I think we all know what that answer is going to be. We'll be back in just a minute with Wesley Smith, and welcome your calls on his concept, his book entitled False Exit. Fascination a two-hour interview with Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the liaison between the Pentagon and the CIA at the time of the assassination of the American president, and then, of course, my overall analysis of the reasons why President Kennedy was assassinated. There's so much information that has not been put out, and if you listen to this four-tape set, you will begin to understand that there are forces at work behind the scenes which have been able to confuse the American people about the reality of the murder of an American president. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, that's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, and ask for the JFK assassination tapes. And of course, we also have an update on the JFK assassination. We also have a book written based upon the papers of Mr. Robert Crowley, who was with the Central Intelligence Agency. And of course, he was in charge of their covert operations. And he tells in the book, Regicide, how they killed President Kennedy.
This is radio health journalist Bill Sardi. Hey, a lot of smart supplement users like to check out the facts before they purchase an herbal product. So go to www.lifespannnutrition.com and read all about Alamax, the new odorless, 100% pure Allicin garlic extract imported from Great Britain. You'll find Alamax is equivalent to 15 cloves of fresh, crushed garlic. Check it out at www.lifespannnutrition.com or call 866-405-4000 to learn more about this breakthrough in garlic technology called Alamax. Call 1-866-405-4000 today.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Let me just mention that I think something that you would find very useful to have would be a water filter. These are portable water filters. And, of course, there's the Big Berkey, designed after the water filter that missionaries have used for 150 years. It's a stainless steel. Two containers, an upper and a lower. The upper is 2.5 gallons. You put in the water, it goes through the ceramic filters into the lower chamber, and of course the water tastes ever so much better. The water, of course, is won't have any bacteria in it to speak of. Certainly they'll filter out all the standard bacteria, and of course there are many of the chemicals and heavy metals that you want to get rid of. And if you'd like to know more about the Big Berkey water filter, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Ordinarily they're $279, but we offer them for $239. And of course, if you buy them through us, why, you'll get a four tape set or a video that we've produced. That's the Big Berkey water filter. They're available in every state in the United States except for California and Iowa. However, there is a water filter that is available here in California. It's called the Berkey Light. And, of course, it is made of lucite. It's transparent, so you can see the water level. The filters are really much more functional, much better filters than the ones with the Big Berkey, but they have to be replaced every several years as well. And they're called the Black Berkey filters. They'll take out all the bacteria and MTBE and many of the other contaminants within your water. So you really have to figure out which one you want. And, of course, part of that will be determined of what you live. The Berkey Light is $199, and once again, you'll get a four-tape set or a video if you buy it through us. And so give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can see the Big Berkey water filter. You can see the Berkey Light water filter. You can evaluate them, see which one would serve best for your purposes. But in times like these, a ready source of water is vitally important. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this afternoon is Wesley Smith, and he's an attorney. He's written extensively on euthanasia in the past. We've got Mike calling us from Santa Cruz. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I got a question, but first I got to frame it up. One of the bottom lines of all this is that our health care has been placed in the hands of corporations whose only interest is their bottom line, always striving to improve that.
But also in the hands of the government officials.
That's part of what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Corporations haven't taken the Hippocratic Oath, whereas it used to be that our health was in the hands of those who had taken that oath. So then what you were saying, how did it get this way? What in the world did government do? Maybe if your guest can answer specifically, that placed all this power in the hands of corporations.
Are you, is that your question?
Yeah.
All right. Did you have any question or comment on that, Wesley?
Oh, sure. I wrote a Forced Exit, which we're talking about, is my book about euthanasia, but I wrote another book called Culture of Death, The Assault on Medical Ethics in America, which gets into this. And what has happened over the last 30 years or so is you've got a rise of a new philosophy called bioethics. And bioethics, which began as an important discussion about how do we handle things such as when the kidney dialysis machine came out and there weren't enough machines for the number of patients who needed them. So, you know, how do we set who gets first in line, right? But what happened was some academic philosophers got involved in this, and they turned bioethics, which is the philosophy of healthcare and public health laws, away from the sanctity of life ethic, the equality of life ethic, towards a utilitarian, quote, quality of life ethic, in which value isn't, in terms of life, is not based on humanity, but on whether one has a proper cognitive capacity or whether one has an enjoyable life. And the worst thing that you can be is a, quote, burden, close quote. Now, this dovetailed very well with the emerging economics of medicine, which went away from fee-for-service medicine, which we used to have, where if a doctor performed a service, you paid the doctor, or the insurance company paid the doctor, to this managed care idea, which is based on the idea of money being made not by providing services, but by cutting costs. And as a consequence, you see the philosophy of bioethics supporting concepts in terms of healthcare, whether government-funded or HMO-funded. You know, it doesn't really matter if you're not getting the health care you need. It doesn't matter whether it's the government taking it away or whether it's a for-profit corporation taking it away. You have the bioethics philosophy dovetailing very well with the cost-cutting ethics and ethos of health care in terms of government funding and corporate funding, so that one supports the other. To the point now where many in bioethics say that the primary obligation of individual physicians isn't to each and every individual patient. As you know, doctor, that's your job as a physician, right? Each and every individual patient is entitled to your optimal service, but to the group of patients that a doctor cares for. So it's doing away with individual responsibility. So if a doctor owes an obligation to a group, that means some patients are going to get better care than others. And the worst news is, no matter what kind of healthcare financing there is, if doctors took the Hippocratic Oath and believed in it, there would be much less danger. But today, doctors don't take the Hippocratic Oath. In fact, the last study I saw, only about 13% of doctors have taken the Hippocratic Oath. And if they don't subscribe to those do-no-harm values, then we're all in big trouble.
Well, I think we are all in big trouble, and this is a direct byproduct of the education that we get in our universities today that erode the moral foundation of society, turn people away from the belief in absolutes, and everything becomes utilitarian. If it works, try it. And I lived through this whole scam, Mike. I saw this when Medicare came in, and they said, look, you can trust this. It's not only going to cost by the, it came in about 65, 66. They said by the year 2000, it's going to cost $9 billion a year. We have that amount of money. We could afford that. Well, by the early 1980s, it was going to cost, obviously it was going to cost not $9 billion, but $90 billion. And so they came up with this idea, we're going to bring competition into medicine. I mean, what's wrong with a free enterprise? And then that's when they begin bringing the PPOs and the HMOs to ration access to health care. But they couldn't tell the American people that that's what they were doing, so they had to say, oh, this is competition. Well, we're going to be back here in just Mike, do you have anything else?
One last quick thing.
Okay, you're going to have to hang
on. Sounds like something that went on not too long ago in Europe, where people were either useless eaters or essential workers.
I think that they called it the life not worth living. That's what they called it in the concentration camps. And that's, of course, when they snuffed out the lives of the disabled and the mentally disabled, and then, of course, the gypsies, and then the Jews, and then 12 million others. But if we never talk about that here in America, I wonder why. We'll be back in just a moment here with Wesley Smith, and we'll take your calls. Thank you. one of our fascinating four tape sets is entitled Concentration Camps, and it's four interviews with people talking about the move to establish concentration camps in the United States. Now, most people say that's foolish talk. We couldn't have that. And yet, if you listen to these tapes, you'll find out that those camps are a reality. They are being set up in case of civil disturbance. And, of course, the authority for the establishment of the concentration camps comes from the executive orders, which were actually put through during the time of the Reagan administration. For documentation of the location and the background to the formation of these camps, their establishment, and what may very well happen, or what they will be used for in the future, I suggest you call our 800 number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR for America, our values, our future are under attack. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I simply want to mention a couple of the products we carry here at Radio Liberty. One of them is called the Miracle 2 soap products, and we're not allowed to make any claims, medical claims for them, but we will tell you that many of our listeners tell us wonderful, wonderful stories about how these products have helped them. And, of course, there's a soap and a moisturizing soap. There's a gel. There's a lotion and an alkaline solution, mineralized alkaline solution, which some people take because they say it helps their heartburn. And I know my wife has taken it. She's certainly felt a lot better and doesn't have to take these pills that were ridiculously expensive. But then all you can do is try it, see if this will help you. And so if you'd like to know more about the Miracle 2 soap products, why, you can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com or call us at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then we hope that many of you out there will consider getting a Phonopoly set for your children, your grandchildren, because they deserve to be able to read and read normally, read through phonics. And, of course, they put a program into our school that they knew was going to fail, and that was the look-see method. And that's why we have such low reading scores. And you're really, the only way you're going to tell if your children can really read is get them to stand up and read something they've never seen before out of the newspaper and see whether they stumble, if they can pronounce the words. If they are trained phonetically, they'll be able to. Phonopoly is a game that's played like Monopoly in many respects. But, of course, in 16 hours, you can undo all the harm that's been done to the minds of your children. It's 5 board games, 2 bonus games, and, of course, there are a couple of books we throw in going into the PLAN program to dumb down America. The telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. Most of these, $500, $600. This is $139.95. Give us a call. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest is Wesley Smith, and we're talking about his book, The Final Forced Exit. And where is that book available, Wesley?
Forced Exit is it's a revised edition of a book I wrote several years ago, and it's really updated and current, and it's been published by a really wonderful publishing company called Spence Publishing. And they're doing something that this is my 10th or 11th book, I've never seen before. If people buy direct from them, they're offering the same kind of discounts that the big bookstore chains get, 50% off. And the book sells at the paperback $17.95. That means people can get a 300-plus page book for $9. I'm not sure I like that as an author. But if people want it, they can call. They can get it at bookstores or on Amazon, but they can also call 888-773-6782 for the 50% discount. 888 toll-free 773-6782, or online go to www.spencepublishing.com, S-P-E-N-C-E, publishing.com, or 888-773-6782.
All right, well, we've got Ben calling from Salinas. Ben, did you have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. To further elaborate on what some people have said using the word utilitarian, by the way, those concentration camps, there's one located around Bakersfield somewhere.
Well, of course, these are old army camps. They're just sitting there waiting,
yeah,
right?
And one is called Hunter Liggett,
right.
And they're called Camp Rex, which in Latin means the camp of the king. So,
all right.
But anyway, last year Mr. Bush took $15 billion with a B out of the Medicare system, discontinued heart therapies in spite of Mr. Cheney's luxury at the use of such therapy. Now they're discontinuing cancer therapy, and they're under the new HMO plan, another $15 billion, $30 billion to pay for the killing going on in Iraq and and Iran there with taxpayer dollars. And it is very true what has been said. They consider the elderly, and elderly to them is anybody over 59, people. You are considered useless eaters unless, like in the justice system, you get all the justice you can afford, and under the HMOs, you get all the health and well-being you can afford. So to the 80% of us who don't have the golden spoon, like the person from Crawford, Texas, God help you, and the real God. And thank you, Dr. Stan, and your guests, for elaborating on this issue. Without your advice and input, many of us would be lost. Continue the fight, sir, and I'm your loyal subject, and I love the way you get the truth out there. It's not Republican or Democrat, people. It's freedom, and if you're not of the wealthy billionaire for lunch bunch, you know what? Your mother and father and children still deserve to have your life, because God gave it to you, and only God can take it.
Okay, Ben, one thing I just wanted to check. Was that money for Medicare, or that was the Veterans Administration? I understood he took $15 billion from the veterans for other...
No, that's $700 million for the veterans. That's $15 billion last year for Medicare, and under his new HMO plan, another $15 billion, and the only way you can access a prescription benefit after you spent $3,700 out of pocket is if you join an HMO, which they say would be about $50 a month, but then you're liable for your first $2,400 of medication, and then after that, you get a 20% discount.
Yeah, wasn't that nice? Thanks so much, Ben. God bless you. Bye-bye. Let's go to Fred calling from Salinas. Fred, did you have a comment on what we've been talking on?
Yes, I have just one comment. I've always felt for years that that the government has used our motion picture industry as a as a way of mind control on people. And I want to just take everybody back to 1972 to a movie called The Soylent Green, and I think that was the first time that I've seen this. What he's talking about is when I first seen this really discussed in a movie, and I think everybody should see that movie if they've never seen it.
Soylent Green is a very interesting picture. I don't think that, frankly, that the government's doing it, but I think popular culture is driving the culture of death. I don't think Soylent Green was driving it. I think it was warning against it, and it is the last movie that E.G. Robinson made.
Uh-huh.
And there is a scene in there in which E.G. Robinson is tired of living. He's depressed, so he goes to a euthanasia clinic to be killed.
They lay him on the bed, and he...
And they lay him on the bed, and they show pictures of the world of the earth as it used to be, beautiful flowers and music. And I remember seeing that, I was pretty young back in 1972, and I was shocked to my core that the idea that there could ever be euthanasia centers for old people to go to. Well, now we find that it's happening, exactly right. And
right.
So, it's something that we need to be very concerned about. And with regard to popular culture, if you take a look at all of the major television shows, and I do write about this in Forest, Texas, if you look at shows that I like, for example, Law and Order, even some of the Star Trek, where no man has gone before, you will find pro-assisted suicide shows repeated in ER on almost every major drama television show there is. You've seen this depicted as the kind, compassionate way to go, and people who oppose it as these rigid religious conservatives who want people to suffer. And actually, the contrary is true. You know, compassion means to suffer with. Our obligation, it seems to me, as human beings, is when we see our loved ones and people who are in our community and our lives going through difficulties, we help them. We help carry those loads for them, not inject them.
Uh-huh. I know everybody. I still believe everybody should watch that film.
I think it's a very prophetic film. Soylent Green is a very
really
prophetic film, and another one is Logan's Run.
Yes, both of them.
Okay, fine. Thanks so much for calling, Fred. And of course, the thing is that our minds are gradually being conditioned to accept things, whether that's what the people who put it at the movie, I don't know, but I will tell you...
They're interested in making money, and killing is good drama. You know, I don't think they necessarily have an agenda, but I don't think they consider what they're presenting. They just kind of buy the facile publicity of the euthanasia movement as if it's true, and it's baloney.
It certainly is. But of course, little bit by little bit, we see the progressive erosion of the standards of the society. And of course, in my way of looking things, once a society turns its back on God, then anything at all is possible. And certainly our society has, in my estimation, rejected the God of the Bible.
Hope not.
Well, let's go to Jeannie right now. Well, of course, our Supreme Court now goes to Europe, to the European Union, and to the United Nations to determine what the laws of America should be. And, of course, we already know what European courts think about, at least certain European courts think about euthanasia. And unfortunately, we seem to see people within our own court system who seem to be so enamored of what other people think rather than what our Constitution says, which was, of course, the foundation of our freedom. Well, let's go to Jeannie, who's calling from Aptos. Hi, Jeannie. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Is it time to recall the Supreme Court?
Well, you can't recall the Supreme Court. The only way you could take the Supreme Court out would be through impeachment, and that would require high crimes and misdemeanors, and that's not going to happen. I will say I was very unhappy to hear that the Supreme Court was looking to the laws of other nations for deciding U.S. law. I don't think that's appropriate as an attorney or as an American. But I will say that when there was an attempt to do a Roe v. Wade assisted suicide lawsuit, the Supreme Court rejected it unanimously.
Mm. All right. Anything else, Jeannie?
One thing we were talking about, disposing of human bodies in euthanasia. When I did the study on the United Nations Biodiversity Assessment Report, I came up with a lot of items that were unsustainable. And one of the items was no more cemeteries. And that was amazing to me because I asked myself, where would the bodies of the human beings go? And so there again, cemeteries are unsustainable.
Right. Of course, people are unsustainable too, according to that report.
Yes.
And of course, the other thing, of course, it said, and those of you who haven't read the Global Biodiversity Assessment and Jeannie's certainly summary of that, need to get it. They say that there are too many people in the world. We need to get the population down to about 2 billion. If we're going to maintain the population we have, it'll have to be with very low living standards, sort of like the Eastern European peasant. But, of course, they think that the real danger to the world is the monotheistic religions, Christianity, the Jewish religion, and, of course, the Muslim religion. And, of course, I can't help but sort of wonder if maybe we're going to fight with the Muslims. And then, of course, once we've done away with the Muslims, then, of course, they can do away with the Christians, divide and conquer. Well, let's see. Anyway, let's go to Nathan. Hi, Nathan. How are you doing?
Hi. Well, you definitely hit on a hot point with me. The Supreme Court is supposed to look at the common law of England and the United States. It's not modern England, but England of the 17th century, and then the constitutional history going back to the Magna Carta. It's definitely not supposed to look at the civil law tradition, and yet that's exactly what it's doing. But I think my main point is that you definitely can see this trend. We're beginning to see depopulation just in the New York Times. They're denying that the UN was supervising forced abortions in China or was going along with it. I don't have the full set of facts in front of me, but something about that charge, I believe, who is it who makes it? Erdfeld or Mosher?
Stephen Mosher, yes.
Yes, I believe he made the charge that indeed it does, if I'm not mistaken.
It does. I heard him speak just this last weekend. Anything else?
Yeah, and yet he's entirely credible, and does he get the press in the New York Times? No, Dr. Jack Kevorkian does.
Okay.
So anything else? That seems to me.
Okay. Nope. Thank you so much. Let's go to Roger. Hi, Roger. Where are you calling from?
Yeah, thanks, Jens, from Allentown.
Okay, fine. Did you have a question or comment for our list, for our guest, Mr. Wesley Smith?
Yeah, this is something that I think is lost on just everybody. And if, say, you normalize to today's dollars, if you were J.P. Vanderbilt or Morgan or whatever, say, 80 years ago, and you got treated for the most expensive disease possible, in today's dollars it might max out at $50,000. You could spend another $1 million for luxuries that wouldn't contribute anything to your recovery. But today it's possible to spend $1 million plus on every person with the effect that it will keep you alive. Now, does that create a moral obligation on society to spend that money through the various socialisms? No. If that's done, then we will all be slaves to the state. We'll have traded our life extension for our children's slavery.
All right, so what is your point?
Well, just that. I hope that's not lost on everyone.
All right, fine. Thanks very much, Roger. Let's get Mr. Smith's response to that. And, of course, the point I believe Roger is making is that, you know, now, of course, we have the ability to prolong life, but all these sorts of elaborate medical procedures, and we can replace kidneys and livers and hearts, and they do all of them. We even do it now on terminal patients with HIV disease because they may live 3 or 4 more years. So, I mean, if people aren't paying for their own health care, does that, of course, many times tend to cause overutilization of all this new technology?
Well, you know, I think if we, I'm puzzled why we're not getting the economics of scale. Why, for example, when I first got a pocket computer, I think it was $50, and it was a clunky one back in the 70s. Now you can buy them for $4 or $5. Why aren't these medical machines having the same kind of effect? Now look at a big color television today. You can buy a big color television today for $250 that in the 70s, because I sold TVs while I worked my way through law school, you'd pay $500 for, and, you know, that's not even considering inflation. So I'm not quite sure why all of these medical machines continue to cost so much and we're not getting savings on it. I think we have to be very careful. That being noted, when we say that people have a duty to die, because it sounded to me as if the caller was coming very close to that claim. And if we're going to have healthcare rationing, it needs to be something that is done above board and not behind the scenes, which is what's happening now. Moreover, I don't believe that you ration people who need healthcare, because you're basically then saying, well, we're going to allow you to have healthcare unless you really need it. What we're talking about doing is discriminating against people who are sick, disabled, and elderly. I do believe that people need to be more responsible for the cost of their own health care to stop overutilization. I think overutilization is a major cause of our resource difficulty, so that if I get the sniffles, if medicine costs me a $5 visit to the doctor, I might go to the doctor. But if it costs me $100, I probably won't go to the doctor for the sniffles, right?
Absolutely, and I think that's the problem. We have to bring personal responsibility back into
yeah.
this. But then there has to be, of course, this catastrophic insurance program that will, of course, take
yes.
care of people from catastrophic and destructive
right, which can happen to anybody. And moreover, you know, most people don't want to be hooked up to machines and carried on forever and ever anymore. I heard a statistic, and I'm speaking off the top of my head, Doctor, so this may be not quite right, but it's close. Only about 5% of the people who die now die in the intensive care unit. You know, it used to be that people were kept in the intensive care unit. By the way, that's when the intensive care unit was a profit part of the hospital. Today it's the lost part of the hospital, so it's harder to get that treatment. But most people want to die naturally in their own bed, surrounded by their loved ones. That's hospice. And hospice is also cost-effective, because you're not applying these high-tech medical procedures on people who are dying. On the other hand, if somebody says, listen, you know, Aunt Minnie says that she wants to fight for her life, who are we to say she shouldn't?
And I think that's what they want to do. They want to take the right to determine what's going to happen away from the individual
exactly
and the family
correct.
And give it to the ethicist and to the financial advisor
that's
to the hospital.
Right. And that's what this whole feudal care theory thing is. And by the way, these feudal care protocols where doctors are refusing wanted life-sustaining medical treatment, these things are being put into hospitals around the state. If you go to, you know, this isn't just Wesley the paranoid. If you go to the, and by the way, doctor, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not really after you, right? But just, if you go to the Cambridge Journal of Healthcare Ethics of September of 2000, you will see an article in there about feudal care policies where they surveyed just 26 of the California hospitals, including most of the UC hospitals, and guess what? Most of these hospitals had feudal care protocols, 24 out of the 26. All but 7 of them gave the final decision in terms of whether to refuse the right to say no to somebody other than the patient or the family. In other words, if a doctor didn't want to provide wanted treatment, then in many of these protocols, a doctor could say no, or an ethics committee could say no. And only 7 of those 24 that had these protocols was the final determination that of the family or the patient, and realize that in these issues, that the futile care issue, we're not talking about a medical judgment, we're talking about a value judgment. And a value judgment belongs with patients and families, not with physicians, bioethicists, and HMO accountants.
And I know one of my friends who left this community where I live because he was told, you know, that these patients were going to have to be let die. And he said, these people don't need to die. They can be helped. Well, he was forced, of course, to get off the case if he felt that way.
I've heard that before. I've heard of pressure being placed on doctors who practice Hippocratic medicine.
Well, I think it's about time maybe we return to the values that once made America the envy of the world. It's been always a pleasure having you with us. Thank you so much for being with us again, and hope we can get you on some of our other programs.
Thank you, Doctor.
Good night. And our guest has been Wesley Smith, and I hope you've enjoyed it. He certainly is one of the most outstanding people talking about an issue which will involve every one of us at some time in our lives, or maybe at the end of our lives. And that is the disregard for the value of human life. Could you believe that there is an organized effort to dumb down children all across America? As we see falling SAT scores, it's very easy to say, well, gee, we need to just spend more money. That'll solve our problem. Ladies and gentlemen, that won't solve the problem at all, because there is an organized program within the hierarchy of education to dumb down our children intentionally. Outcome-Based Education is a fascinating book written by Pamela Hobbs Hofker and Pat Lutzik, going into the background of the program of the humanists who gained control of the educational establishment in the United States to change the attitude of our children, to change their attitude towards God and family and country. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for Outcome-Based Education. Once you understand what they're doing to your children, you'll never look at the world through the same eyes again. 1-800-5-HIV-1. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just comment on a couple of things. First of all, we have an awful number of tape sets on euthanasia, on genocide, on why do we still have cancer, on fluoridation. We actually have a population control special, and it includes, as I recall, four tape sets, one video that I did, and then my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. It's about $120 worth of value for $69.95 when we pay the postage. And really, of course, you must understand that there really is a genocidal agenda out there. Do you know why they want to fluoridate the water? In large part, because it decreases fertility rates. This is all about population control. They want to dramatically cut back on the population of the world. And there really are people who want to get the population down to 2 billion, to 1 billion, to 500 million. David Foreman wants to get the world population down to 100 million. What's he going to do with the other 98% of us? Well, they've got their plans, ladies and gentlemen. There really are evil and wicked people out there. Let me suggest that you seriously consider getting any one of our four tape sets, and that would be fluoridation, genocide, why do we still have cancer, population control, or of course get the population control agenda special for $69.95. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Or maybe just get our four tape set on population control. Why did they outlaw DDT? Why to bring back malaria? All of the scientific studies that you've been told about are phony as far as the dangers of DDT, but then after all, when you control the media, why you can control what the American people think. But the scientific studies that were valid, of course, made a lie out of what the American people were told. They outlawed DDT so malaria would come back and kill millions every year. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and this is the time when I have to remind our listening audiences that my ministry is listener-supported, and primarily, we hope many of you out there will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and for a suggested gift of $20 a month or more, as much as you can afford, well, you'll get our four best tapes of the month, you'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll be helping us do what we do, is 5 hours every day we reach out across America with the news behind the news, the story behind the story. The American people are not getting the truth through the regular means of communication. Television is being used, as Fred said, to influence our attitude and our outlook, and there really are people who are using television to alter our perspective. In fact, if you do not believe that the Central Intelligence Agency has people planted all throughout our journalism, I suggest you get a new book. It's out called Fixing Intelligence by General Odom. We don't carry it because, of course, the only two things in the book are really significant, and that is two places where he talks. This is the head of NSA, General Odom, saying, well, you know, there's a serious question whether or not why the CIA should have people planted in journalism all across America. This has been going on for years. They control what the American people think. This is the tragedy, and most people have no idea this has been going on. They're working within the people who publish your magazines and your journals, the books that you get. In fact, my friend Craig Roberts, when his book was gone over by Simon & Schuster, he was called by the editor shortly after the book was rejected, and the editor said, you've got to get that book published. And Craig said, if it's a great book, why won't you publish? And the man said, I'd lose my job if I put that book out. Dan Rather, interviewed on Gregory Platt's television program, BBC, while Rather was on the way to Iraq recently, told Platt, I cannot tell the truth in America. I can't ask the difficult questions. If I did, they'd necklace me. That was his words, at least according to Gregory Plass. So you have to understand we're not getting the truth, and that's what Radio Liberty is all about. And if you want to join us in this epic struggle to bring the truth to the American people, join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us. Go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. If you're interested in water filters, you can see the various types of water filters there. And if you buy them through us, well, you'll get a four-tape set or a video we produced. Those are the Berkey water filters. We hope that you'll, of course, see the other products that we carry. You may be interested in getting a Phenopoly set. You may be concerned about the skyrocketing cost of health care. And, of course, if you're coming from a Christian perspective, why, you may very well want to consider getting MediShare, which is a Christian health-sharing or cost-sharing program. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Of course, we always suggest to our listeners that they seriously consider getting Alamax, which is a garlic product. And, of course, the people who, brought Alamax to the United States have asked us to recommend it. I recommend it because I've been using it for 8 months and I've been doing pretty well as far as colds. Give them a call at 866-405-4000. If you're interested in setting up an Institute of the Constitution, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, and we'll put you in touch with the people who are setting up these institutes all across America to teach people about our Constitution and how we're losing it. And then, of course, we ask you at this point to pray for America and to pray for revival, because if the American people don't turn back to God, why, America will never again be blessed. And I believe that, of course, we are soon to see God's wrath on America unless, of course, there is a massive revival in this country. And, well, all we can do is hope and pray it'll come about. And then, of course, we ask you to pray for our ministers, because they should be leading the spiritual battle. And lastly, we ask you to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, when we'll be back with you again with another fascinating program, this is Dr. Stan saying goodbye, and may the Lord be with you.